At Beer and Bomb and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beer and Bomb and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
and online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Thinking. It is the second Tuesday of the month, time for Understanding Autism, and we have our head honcho host, Dave Isaac, the founder and creator of Breakthrough Thinking, and we have
Thank you very much.
We have Paul Loudon, my amazing co-host, and I am Kim Isaac. I am an autism specialist, and Understanding Autism is a bi-monthly radio show that we're doing to help promote awareness and understanding, mostly understanding. Paul's going to kill me that I use the word awareness. I'm busted.
I have no problem with awareness, but I think that we need to move past it now.
That's the goal. Sorry, came out, couldn't help it. And we have a very special guest with us today. We have Laura Kameny, and she is a self-diagnosed person who self-diagnosed herself with Asperger's. And she has a master's degree in elementary education, and she's taught in the community colleges. And, you know, she's a very valuable resource in terms of learning about experiences of people who have experienced, you know, difficulties in the school system herself. And so we're really looking forward to sort of discussing what her experiences are, what Paul's has been. And really the topic today is talking about diagnostic measures in the high schools, middle schools, high schools, and colleges for those people who seem to be sort of sliding through the cracks or barely getting by. And what happens is they end up out of school and have a lot of extreme difficulties. And I think it's important that we talk about where the gaps are in terms of diagnostic measures and monitoring and the effects of that. So welcome, Laura.
Thank you.
So glad to have you.
Thanks.
I'm very curious about something. Maybe I can ask a quick question. It fascinates me, self-diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you come to that?
In a limited way. It's not entirely self-diagnosis, but I have gone through, I've had years of therapy in my life, and I've tried different approaches behind therapy and things like that. And I've recently been working with some people at ASU's Inclusive Communities program, which is more oriented towards life coaching. Instead of trying to analyze what you are either doing wrong or thinking wrong, it's really focused towards what are you doing that's helping you move forward, what isn't getting you forward, and just focusing on what works and moving you with that. So some of the people in that program were the ones who had suggested that this is probably a more realistic description for me. And I just went back through my list like a little checklist, and yes, 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 everything else I had tried in terms of ADD, in terms of being an angry person, all of those things just did not fit anywhere near as well.
Did that create a sense of relief once you found out what was occurring?
I think so. But, you know, you can get a sense of relief. You can also get a sense of fear if all you're coming in with is the stereotypes. Because I didn't know anything but Rain Man coming in.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And that this diagnosis didn't really scare me because I was already working with them. And they're like, yeah, that's probably the name for what you're dealing with. Okay. And it was just adding a name onto it. But at one point, I had someone who diagnosed me with something very nasty that I really don't want to mention on the air. And it was very scary. And they just sort of said, you have this. And they let me walk out the door and left me with it. And it was not an accurate description. It was actually a result of misunderstanding a way he asked the question. And I tried to ask for clarification. And we still didn't connect.
Right.
So I later realized he was taking my answer to be something else and diagnosing me on the basis.
That's really concerning to me as a therapist, is I think it's so important for professionals to take a lot of time to get to know a person. I think making quick judgments on diagnosis or just even at surface behaviors, it's just not enough anymore. It really isn't. Probably never has been. But as we understand more about various disorders and, you know, professionals in the mental health field are supposed to be keeping up with current research and, you know, current interventions. And it's hard to know what professionals are actually taking that responsibility. I mean, ethically, they are supposed to under their code of ethics professionally. And, you know, you never really know if they're doing that. But what concerns me is getting a diagnosis like that, a misdiagnosis, can be really damaging to a person in terms of creating that fear and hopelessness and potentially sending them on a different direction than what you needed to be going on.
I was given that information on the same day that the radio announced a shooting of someone who had forgotten to take his medicine but was acting weird at the airport because of the same issue.
Aww.
So that was what I drove home to.
Wow.
Well, I mean, one of the big difficulties with autism and autism spectrum disorders, especially, but in general, mental conditions in general, is that it is such a spectrum of things, and yet we diagnose this by, is this happening, is this happening? With autism, you know, you need to fit certain conditions, and you have Asperger's. Other conditions, you have autism. And if you're not, it's the six letters, something not otherwise denoted or not.
Oh, PDDNOS.
That one, yeah. That
pervasive
we,
developmental disorders. Not
they obviously have
specific
problems that belong on the autism spectrum, but we don't have a name for this one yet, so they get this. Where it's a condition of who you see and who you talk to and which questions they ask you, whether they miss the right questions to ask or misinterpret your answers, where instead of looking at, say, what problems are you having, where are you running into difficulties, we're looking at how do we put a label on this person, what is the right label for this person, and while that can be useful in a generalizing sense and in a sense for, say, getting insurance support or whatever, because then you have a name to give them to say, this is why you should be helping with my medical payments, it doesn't help in terms of necessarily addressing the problems because you're not looking at, like you said, the people who are helping you at ASU were looking at how do I move forward rather than what am I doing wrong. Mm-hmm. And that sort of approach is what really needs to be looked at, is where can we improve things?
And another really critical aspect, which kind of does relate to this topic, you know, in a kind of in a more straightforward fashion, is, you know, in as children, when they're infants and toddlers, teachers and, you know, administrative staff at schools are trained to look for developmentally, you know, sound progression. And not just in skills, but they actually do look for some emotional developmental things. And what happens is those teachers are trained to look for those things specifically. But as you get into higher levels of education, those teachers aren't trained to see, wait, did those processes develop and evolve? Or maybe regress, or, you know, who knows what can happen. Mm-hmm. But that is an aspect of development that higher education teachers aren't looking for. They don't even consider that to be part of their job description. But what it seems like as the autism population increases, and there is such a need, I mean, so many people are getting diagnosed 30s, 40s, even 50s, you know, and you think, how could they've gone through so much time and nobody really noticed, or they noticed but didn't explore and help them try to investigate? And that's, I think that's a big problem right now.
I think our schools are going to start dealing with it more. I've learned from ASU that they had actually had some situations where parents were calling in and saying, my kid's been graduated for 5 years. You said my kid was ready to be a professional in the real world, and he hasn't kept a job. What's going on? And the school has said, well, we need to look at this. And they're trying to address, identify what the issues are and how to put things in place. So that's very hopeful.
Yes.
But it's not in place fully yet. Right. And that's one place that's right. Moving forward in that direction.
And I think that's great. And I know I have good confidence in ASU. I know Jim Adams, he runs a lot of the autism research and autism programs. And that's a very good start. A lot of times I think at this point, maybe that the word awareness is more appropriate for this, for educators at this point. They're starting to realize something's not right. We didn't think of it this way or whatever. And I think even, you know, some of the high school teachers I've seen, they're aware, but they haven't been trained on, let's say they observe a particular behavior. They don't know where to take it. Mm-hmm. So it may either be ignored because I don't know what to do with this. And, you know, of course, due to funding and things like that, it's very hard to provide the kind of training that's needed under those kinds of restrictions. But it is good to know that is evolving.
Well, another thing with high school and older kids and adults in general is that when you see strange behaviors, you're more likely to look for intent. You're more likely to think they're doing this for a specific reason that they've thought of. Whereas with younger children, they don't really think ahead a lot. They just do whatever seems appropriate at the time. So when you see a kid doing something inappropriate, you think they don't know what's appropriate. Whereas when you see an adult doing something inappropriate, you think they know what's appropriate but are choosing not to do it anyway.
Right.
So it's sort of a different way, a different
right.
perspective is given to people above a certain age. And they don't stop and take that step back and go, but what if he doesn't know?
And, you know, too, I think this, you know, we've been talking a lot about stereotypes and culture over the past few weeks. And I think there's that stereotype that comes with teenagers, too. You know, we see a behavior, it's like, oh, these teenagers, you know, they're difficult, they're defiant, they're protestful, you know. But obviously that's not always the case. And I think, you know, getting past stereotypes is going to be very important in this particular case especially.
One thing I would offer to high school teachers in particular, and a lot of people I think who deal with these issues we're struggling with have close relationships with some teachers at their schools, and I know that I did. There were times when my teachers saw things that would be generally considered very, very inappropriate behavior that I was completely ignorant of, and my classmates were responding to, and I was ignorant to the fact that they were responding. Mm. And my teacher was too uncomfortable to talk to me, so she talked to my mother, and my mother was too uncomfortable to talk to me, so it went to the therapist before there was even talking to me. And this is a miscommunication and nothing more. So it escalates like that. But the one thing that perhaps teachers can be aware of, if you have a student that you don't think is a malicious student who deliberately likes to mess things up, who deliberately goes out provoking, and they do something that's very provocative, well, then maybe there's something different than what you're assuming.
And it's important to communicate about that, you know, with the student. I think on the teacher's end, a lot of that uncertainty, sometimes people don't know how to handle uncertainty. And I think teachers also feel, you know, some teachers are fearful for following the rules. They don't want to overstep, you know, certain things. But I think there's got to be communication about how to communicate where they don't feel that fear of, you know, overstepping or doing the wrong thing. And I think we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to continue our discussion on diagnosis in the later years of life. And we're looking forward to hearing more perspectives from both Laura and Paul. And again, you're listening to Breakthrough Thinking's Understanding Autism, and we'll be right back.
How healthy is your business? Is your business plan helping your bottom line? Do you even have a business plan? Barbara Haggerty of Mind Your Own Business has over 25 years of helping businesses of all kinds and sizes to get them where their owners want them to go. She uses her special wellness check process. It's to assess where your business is now, and then uses her own unique 7-steps business excellence plan to expand and grow your business into something to be proud of. Barbara will take a holistic or a global appreciation view of your company, and that's absolutely going to make a difference to your bottom line. So call now and schedule a wellness check and watch your business grow. 602-750-4518. That's Barbara Haggerty of Mind Your Own Business. 602-750-4518.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Welcome back to Breakthrough Thinking's Understanding Autism. I am Kim Isaac. I am an autism specialist. Of course, we have our head honcho host, Dave Isaac, who's taking notes and extremely curious about this topic and just waiting to chime in on something NLP related, which we'll get to in a minute. And we also have the amazing, awesomely, I know I'm biased, co-host Paul Loudon, who is an adult on the spectrum, which actually I don't think we introduced at the beginning of the show.
You briefly said
sorry
it,
about
think.
That.
And then I don't care.
And then we have Laura Kameny, a special guest with us. She has diagnosed herself with Asperger's issues, and she's talking today about her experience and her insight and wisdom. And before the break, we were talking about we were talking about a lot of things, and I think what we were going to lead into at this point in the show is talking about misdiagnosis. And I know Dave had a question.
Well, you know, I was curious about labels, how that can, and we talked off there a little bit at the break about this, where if you're misdiagnosed and you get a certain label or an identity, and there's certain behaviors and beliefs and a whole set of expectations that go with a label, where maybe you didn't have a certain behavior before the label, but if you start believing that's who you are, then you adopt that. And Paul, you were talking about some experiment or study. Why don't you talk about that?
I can't remember the exact name of it, but it's pretty famous as a study that went very, very wrong. That a professor at, I want to say it's Stanford, but I'm not sure. He got a group of volunteer students, and half of them were assigned as guards, and half of them were assigned as prisoners. And it was – I can't even remember what the original purpose of the study was. But over a period of time, they found that the students being assigned as guards were honestly thinking of the students who were prisoners as worthless, as non-human, and treating them very abusively. They had to call it to a stop. It kind of ran out of control, and they found that the use of labels there just created a mental image where people went into the role of their label. And to a degree, I definitely think that that's possible with diagnosis as well. If you tell someone that they're ADHD, then if they're not, for various reasons, they may start acting, if they think that it's an excuse or a reason or whatever. But honestly, for me, the greater fear is if you tell a teacher Bob has ADHD and Bob is on the spectrum somewhere, the teacher's going to see the ADHD behaviors, not turning in homework, not paying attention in class, and say, okay, these are okay, I need to work with these. And then they're going to see the missing social cues and the other things, and Bob not reacting the right way or getting into fights or whatever, as being a problem student. So he's a problem student with ADHD rather than a normal student on the spectrum who needs help in more areas. So, you know, and again, though, once you've got the label can affect both sides, the observers and the person who's been labeled. And it just it's a real problem if you're not careful enough in getting the right diagnosis, because it can be more harmful than just not helping the right way.
And I think it's important. I mean, obviously, you know, yeah, a label, it's tricky because a label can be beneficial when it's accurate, you know, and well thought out. And I mean, in terms of defining an accurate problem to be worked on. But if you do get that misdiagnosis, a person often, as Paula is saying, you know, they'll be either A, getting help for the wrong things, B, they themselves be focused so much on that they're not improving themselves on something maybe they could have been working on. And, you know, also I think just a confidence thing. I mean, a lot of times people think that, you know, well, they're the professional, they're always right. And I personally, you know, as a professional myself, I don't like that thought. I want people to ask me questions. I want people to question me, and they should, because I think part of being responsible for one's own, you know, health care and treatment is being comfortable with who they're working with to discuss those things and not feel like it's a one-sided thing, like, okay, she's telling me this, it must be this. You know, if it's unsettling or it doesn't feel right or anything, I would hope that professionals, you know, and teachers would be comfortable enough to actually dialogue about it versus exert their authority as the professional and, you know, hand out those things.
That's actually a difficulty I've had with a few doctors or other people that I've visited, is that that when I've asked questions, they've tried to simplify things over much for me. They've come up with an expectation that I don't know if it's my diagnosis or other things, that once they know about it, they answer questions in a way where I feel like they don't want to tell me everything because they feel that I wouldn't be able to keep up or understand. And so I feel that the doctor's talking down to me, and it makes me very uncomfortable and not to want to visit again. And that's, you know, again, one of the dangers of the labels is if someone doesn't understand it, they may see Asperger's, see it's on the autism spectrum, and expect a learning disability to go with it. And then, you know, they're surprised that you're literate, that you can talk well, that you can express yourself at all, because they have their wrong assumptions about it. So labels are dangerous both for what they mean and for when people misunderstand what they mean. They are important, again, to be able to help start. I mean, like I said, like Laura said, when she found Asperger's fit her so well, it gave her a bit of relief because it gave her a perspective on what's actually going wrong. I know when I was diagnosed just with depression, I became more depressed because all of the problems I was having were then, if I just had depression, then these were just things I'd created for myself. You know, I didn't have any additional tools for tackling them or looking at them. So the depression was harder to tackle because I was seeing it as the problem and not a symptom, and seeing the other things that were the problem as, okay, these must be normal. Why are they bothering me so much?
Yeah, Laura, what was your experience when you said, you know, you went in and received an unsettling diagnosis? What was your experience with that? Can you remember the feelings you had when you left there and days after, and how did that affect you?
It was very difficult, and a part of me was just sitting in shock from it, except my stepmother, who has a background in social work, said, oh, yes, of course, that's you. And I accepted it as double authority now. One question, Kim, for you. I know that I take things people say very literally.
Okay.
I've always taken rules as very important. And I think that's true for a lot of people on the spectrum. So people on the spectrum may be even more inclined, possibly, to take something that's told to us
right.
as authority and try and fit our understanding of what we're doing
right.
into that.
That makes sense.
I think I would agree with that in my experience, as long as I still believe them authority, like the case of that doctor who was talking down to me, wouldn't explain things, I sort of dismissed him as not being willing to think about things or discuss things thoroughly. But as long as I feel someone is still an authority, I have a tendency to assume that when they're saying something, they're saying it based on thought, careful reasoning, and that they probably have a solid reason for it. So I think I can sort of relate to that where you know, it's rule-based. If someone is an expert on something, then they are more likely to get the right answer than me. So I should probably trust them unless I have very solid evidence that they're wrong.
Well, I'm going to put something in here, Paul, because one thing that I have discovered, because I've been teaching in the community colleges for 3 years, I've been focusing on remedial skills in a very vocational program. And I've seen that my students come in with such different skills and such different abilities and so little confidence sometimes in their own ability to recognize what's working or what isn't for them. And I always tell my students, you know, yeah, I may be the expert in this math. I may be the expert in how nouns and verbs fit together, but you're the expert in how you learn. You know what's working for you and not. And my doing one side of this doesn't mean anything unless they're also doing their part and saying, this works for me, this doesn't make sense, here's where we need to go. I'm confused about X, Y, Z so that we can address those things because they are the experts in themselves. And I'd like to see all people getting the confidence to talk with
them. I think that's a huge, you know, as we're talking about this, I feel like this is maybe the most important message of this show. Is one to help if people are listening out there that have Asperger's or think they may have Asperger's or experience these scenarios, you know, there is a respectful, empowering way to communicate with whether it's your teachers, your professors, you know. I think one is we, you know, as a community and as professionals, we should focus on how to help adults with these issues to feel comfortable to communicate. I think sometimes maybe they don't. One, they don't know that it's okay, especially with, you know, these images of teachers and educators we give. I mean, you listen to the teacher, you know, they're the authority. And while there is appropriate respect, I think on that, the flip side is educators and teachers need to be open to the fact that everybody has valuable communication and not get stuck in their role. Well, I'm the teacher. I mean, part of this has to do with the attitudes of the people that individuals are working with, whether it's a psychologist or a psychiatrist. I think it's important that those professionals don't sort of get that big head and let their degrees define who they are. In the educational field and the mental services, you know, mental health, it's critical that that's not the first thing that's on the mind of professionals. The first thing is addressing the people as people. And so, you know, it's tricky. Some people go through several professionals, but, you know, before finding one that's a good fit. And, you know, if anybody is out there listening, I think it's important if something doesn't feel right, to do your best to explore it and not be afraid to take the time to do more research or talk to a friend about it or talk to, you know, the person you're working with about it. 'Cause being empowered is very important, or feeling empowered and somewhat confident is very important. And I know that for some people who don't have the realization that they can be an advocate for themselves and they can still do it respectfully. You know, sometimes I've seen in classrooms where, you know, teenagers with autism in the high schools, they are trying to communicate these things, but it's coming out as defiant. I think if teachers realize, you know what, there's an intention behind this behavior and I really need to look at that. You know, as a responsible educator, because it's not just about putting a Band-Aid or a stop on the behavior. It's about helping this person become more self-aware and confident. That's part of education. And I think that someone might have an NLP addition to behavior and intentions.
No, I was just going to say I'm proud of you for every behavior as a positive intention. You are quite right. But however, I was going to say this show creates a resource for potential empowerment for people, because you're the expert, and of course Paul, with all the great experiences and the way he articulates and relates to other people out there, that I suspect they could probably write you comments if they're in doubt on some diagnosis.
Oh yes,
and I'm just thinking of that you could be a resource on the air, off the air, because you're here for other people.
Well, we'd love to have people coming to our Facebook page and starting conversations. I mean, even if it's not us specifically that comments on it, hopefully there are other people who are experiencing it, maybe professionals, maybe other people who've been on it, who can then provide a discussion about, well, have you thought about it from this angle? Have you, you know, read this book? Have you seen this article? So, you know, come to our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/understandingautismradio, and we'd love to get you involved in the discussion of this.
Absolutely.
Of any part of this.
Or you can call in. If you have a question, you can call the station while we're here live at 602-296-3632.
And you can text us at 832-278-1441 while we're on the air.
And again, if you're just now getting a pen or a pencil, the in-studio call-in is 602-296-3632.
And the text number is 832-278-1441.
And we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to continue our discussion on the impact of, you know, not receiving and receiving a diagnosis later in life, middle school, high school, and adulthood. And we're going to be back with Paul and Laura to have them describe their experiences in further detail. And we'll be right back.
Weidenauer, Heighton & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Weidenauer, Heighton & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today. 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Welcome back to Breakthrough Thinking's Understanding Autism. I am Kim Isaac. I am an autism specialist and a co-host here on Understanding Autism. Of course, we have the lead host, Dave Isaac.
Who's I like the word head honcho better. What happened to that?
Big Daddy Dave?
Yeah, there we go.
Dad, you're so rubbing off on Paul.
I like it. I love the shirt, too. That's such a cool shirt. I want one of those shirts.
Yeah, my friends Jamie and Robert gave it to me after coming back from a comic convention once.
Nice.
So, Paul always has very interesting clothing very cool. choices and interesting conversation starters. And we also have Paul Loudon, who's now referring to Dave as Big Daddy Dave. Okay.
That was a once-off.
Oh, my God. I'll be curious to see
what
listeners are going to comment about that one. Anyways, Paul is an adult on the autism spectrum who's 28 years old, almost 29, January 12th, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
Okay, got it.
You got it right this time.
And we also have Laura Kameny with us. She is an adult who has self-diagnosed herself with Asperger's, and she has a master's in elementary education, and she's taught in community colleges, and she has very interesting experiences that she wanted to share on the air today. And, you know, I think our goal always on this show is to provide, to share experiences and insights to lead to better understanding of autism. And I feel like we're really doing that in this show. And I really appreciate you being here and being brave and open and willing to share what's
Thank
gone
you.
On for you.
Actually, I was thinking during the break about something. We're talking about autism here, but some of the things we've talked about are actually really important, even when someone's not on the spectrum. We were talking about education and identifying the reason why people are doing things. If you have a problem student who has nothing wrong with him at all, but he's still acting out, he's causing problems in the classroom, he's doing things wrong, it's better to try to identify why they're doing it, talk with them, see what the issue is, rather than just saying stop it and trying to enforce rules. So with what we've been talking about, you know, the diagnosis process applies even to people who don't have something that specifically needs diagnosed, because we're diagnosing the problem in the classroom rather than the specific condition.
And I think, and off the air, Laura and I were talking about this, but I think part of, you know, something in the education system that teachers need to be aware of is, you know, obviously academics are important, but part of education is learning multi-dimensions of knowledge, self-knowledge, self-awareness, how to be a good communicator. I mean, you know, a lot of kids come out of school and, you know, they learn their math and they learn their ABCs, and they do have problems in life, whether they're on the spectrum or not. And some of those problems relate to, you know, critical thinking, dynamic thinking, communication, senses of confidence. You know, I think there is a way to maintain order in classrooms, but still acknowledge the individual needs and communications of the students. And I think, I know you've had some really interesting thoughts about school system overhauls, and I know there might be a lot to that. But can you share, like, sort of a condensed version of your of your thinking?
A very, very condensed version would be saying that what's usually described as six dimensions, sometimes I see it up to seven or eight. I'm sorry, I can go long-winded on descriptions. It talks about things like physical wellness, emotional health, spiritual health, financial wellness, all of these different areas of what you need to, as an adult, live a healthy, balanced life. And we see right now the kids in our school who are so obese. Mm. We see the kids who may do fine in school but have such behavior issues. We see the kids who get through school, graduate even with honors, and are not able to hold down a job. And I think we need to be looking, I think it would be worth looking as a community at what options are there, maybe to move to a model where we really are addressing all of these different areas and saying, how do we help make sure that our students are going forward successfully? One possibility for that, I know that in industry, a lot of people use the ONET levels from the Occupational Network, and they're guides about certain skill levels that people would have in certain different areas, reading, math, in different areas, in order to do certain careers. Hmm. Well, if those were aligned also with the social skills, if those were aligned with the health skills, if those were aligned with the self-management,
right,
and then we could be sure that we were putting each student into a track that you always want to be careful with the word tracking, I know, but
right,
giving each student options and making sure that they were building in all areas so that they had a minimum basis at least in any one of those areas to go forward into
right,
a viable way of taking care of themselves.
Yeah, it's like it's an outcome path, and it's really interesting because the more I talk about this, I'm even gaining awarenesses, but a lot of times currently, you know, there's talk of we don't have a lot of outcome research for people on the spectrum. Outcome meaning the things you're talking about. And so I've met many adults on the spectrum who have successfully completed college with honors, and they're unable to hold a job. And, you know, but I'm realizing even through this discussion is that that's also some of the population in general. And it'd be interesting to really look at in education systems. I mean, what is the big picture goal here? It's not to do well on a test, because when you're out in the world, there are these dimensions of what constitutes a successful adult. And I think that's beneficial for people on and off the spectrum. So if the goal is to turn children into or provide opportunity for them to grow into what is a successful adult, I don't think there's a lot of defining that in the school systems in a broad, you know, way. But how do we know we're doing a good job if we're not looking at the outcome? I mean, it almost feels like we're kind of, you know, hoping for, well, we'll teach them what we teach.
We're measuring their reading and math. Aren't we measuring enough?
Right. And when you think about it, I mean, obviously those things have importance. I mean, we need those things, but it can't be the only things. And I really think a long-term vision and using some foresight in combination with, you know, doing some additional research, you know, what paths in education provide or promote the most optimal outcomes, and what are the outcomes? You know, people can get out of school and learn to read and write and do math, but people can't balance their checkbook.
I think there's a lot of space for research here. Mm-hmm. I also think there are a lot of people who are bright people who have looked at their own experiences, and I would love to see more of those stories coming out. I would love to see, I like database compilations so that I can see all the resources, all the connections in front of me. But I'd almost love to see that, a database, a book of people's personal experiences even, where we could look and see how has this played out. Mm-hmm. In my education,
like
life, in my career
case study
life,
type things, yeah,
not always even really long in depth,
right?
But things that give us an idea.
I mean, I think a huge benefit would be just along the way. One of the biggest difficulties that seems to run into people, you mentioned people who can do math but can't do their checkbook, even though technically they're the same thing, they aren't able to think about them in the same way. Is that people don't learn about how they think. That most people don't actually think about their own thought processes. That there's sort of that second level of, okay, how am I making this decision? Now that I've made it, what process led to it? There's the idea of the sunk cost problem, where you buy something and it doesn't turn out as good as you expect it to be, but you think of it as better than it is because of how much you spent on it. Or, you know, you buy a car and it costs... It's really cheap, but it turns out you're going to have to put a bunch of money into it. You would actually save money by getting rid of that car and buying another car that cost, you know, twice as much but had half the work to do on it. But rather than doing that, rather than just throwing the car out, you say, I can't get rid of that car. I spent this much money on it. And so you keep putting more money in. The simplified is throwing bad money after good, you know. Or good money after bad, rather.
I had a pause moment there. What? But wait, say that again.
Anyway, but the idea is that we aren't really designed to look at it in a statistical way. They did a study. There's only 600 people left on Earth, and a doctor comes to you, and he says he has two different cures for this disease that everyone has. One of them will definitely save one out of every three people. So 200 will live, 400 will die. The other one might save everyone, and it might kill everyone. It has a one-third chance of saving everyone and a two-thirds chance of killing everyone. So it has the same odds, statistically speaking, but one of the opportunities is everyone dies. Most people in that situation will pick the one that will save the 200 people because you're saying save. If you change the wording of the problem so that they say this pill will kill 400 people, so if you change the wording of it, even though the math of the situation is the same, people will make the other choice. And it's the way that we don't think about how we're thinking. We don't look at the problem without sort of distancing ourselves from it. The word choice matters. The situation matters, where in one social situation we might make one decision. In the other social situation we might make a different decision, even if the problem is the same. That the idea of stopping and thinking about how we think can help us approach the checkbook issue better, balancing your budget, because you're thinking of debts and thinking about how you're thinking of debts. But it can also help us earlier on in high school and middle school education, because you can start to see, I think of social situations differently than other people. Maybe this is something we need to start addressing. If you look really hard about how we're thinking, a lot of these issues, while you don't come up with a solution for them, it might help us in identifying them better.
I got an example of this.
Oh.
Would you like one before our break?
Absolutely.
Let me give you one. Because that's brilliant, Paul, because if you think about it, if you extend it out, it's language patterns. For example, let me just do a little experiment right now.
Can I volunteer? I'll volunteer.
All three of you can volunteer.
Okay.
Now, if I said it's sunny today, but it will rain tomorrow, where's your focus? Sunny today, but will rain tomorrow.
It's going to be raining.
Exactly. Because of the but. It's the structure of the language pattern.
I didn't even think, I was just like... It's two pieces of data.
Okay, but let me give this one. It's sunny today and it will rain tomorrow. One word change. Equal?
Much more equal standing.
Much more. Think about it. No, this is how.
I have a little processing delay myself. Let me think for a minute.
But that's okay. Let me go back. It's
sunny. I can see what you're saying.
Yeah,
there,
it's sunny today, but it will rain tomorrow. Focus is on the back end.
Well, but has an oppositional sort of.
Exactly. But people do this.
The data content of those two sentences is the same.
It's the same, and that's what Paul's doing. So I'm just trying to give you a little NLP here. Now, it's sunny today and it will rain tomorrow. Equal. How about this? It's sunny today even though it will rain tomorrow. Even though.
So let me interrupt for just a moment, because when you were saying that it's sunny today, but it will rain tomorrow, technically, that's just saying this is a different concept that goes in a different direction. Mm-hmm. And so it's not necessarily quite as oppositional as you're saying.
But a lot of people do.
A lot of people do. You could set up situations where it would be much more definitely intended that way. Although it's sunny today, it'll rain tomorrow. And then it's building up. It's because of what the sunniness today, you're building the set of expectations. And yes, we're going to dash them when we say tomorrow it will do to the opposite.
Very interesting.
How about this, real quickly? I'm happy, but I have a problem. I'm happy even though I have a problem. Think about it. It makes a difference. The language pattern makes a difference on how it interprets it.
Really
you see? Mm-hmm. I'm happy, but I have a problem. Mm-hmm. I'm happy even though I have a problem.
We need to get rid of our buts, because buts almost negate, literally, me too, I know. no. No, the word but almost negates the positive.
Well, it does.
It actually makes you sort of throw out the positive and go, oh, now what? Or...
But if we were more aware of how we're thinking about those things, we can choose whether we interpret that sentence as positive or negative rather than letting the wording of the sentence interpret it for us.
Right.
It's all about choice.
Yes, it is. And we're going to continue this very interesting discussion after the break. Again, if you want to call in, you can contact us live right now at the show at 602-296-3632.
Or text 832-278-1441.
We would love to answer your questions and or just even hear your thoughts and comments. Again, 602-296-3632.
Or 832-278-1441 for text.
You're listening to Understanding Autism, and we'll be right back.
At Birum Baum & Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Welcome back to Breakthrough Thinking's Understanding Autism. I'm Kim Isaac. I'm an autism specialist and actually the owner, I didn't mention this before, of Autism with Excellence Autism Consulting. And I am a co-host on this show. Of course, we have Big Daddy Dave, the creator and owner of Breakthrough Thinking. I'm not going to let that go. Thank you. And we have a co-host, Paul Loudon, all the way from Houston, Texas. And he is 28 years old on the autism spectrum, and he's a really fun and insightful co-host, and I really appreciate him making the effort to come here every month. He's like rolling his eyes at me. Okay, anyway. And we have Laura Kameny. We're so grateful to have you today. Your insights are really valuable, and I think, especially on our show, it's refreshing to have a new perspective, and I really appreciate that. Now, during the break, you had some important points you wanted to make sure and share with the listeners, and I want to make sure we get to that.
Well, I was thinking very much about my own experience, both in school and in the work world, and I really discovered that a lot of situations where there has been a real misunderstanding, I say, but I didn't mean that. People are telling me what I meant, that I was trying to shock people, that I was trying to be insubordinate. I've had that term used. And I'm trying to be insubordinate. I'm told that I'm trying to be insubordinate when I am putting in dozens of hours of overtime and begging for clarity on exactly what's expected of me and checking so hard exactly what's required. It's like a slap in the face to be told that you're being insubordinate when that's the case. I would say that the one thing we should be asking or even demanding of our employers and of the teachers and administrators in our children's schools is a willingness to at least look at the side of this by assuming good intent. If you are not willing to believe me when I say, you know, I'm trying and something isn't connecting here, then I'm really not going to be able to go much further with you in any productive work or school context.
Well, you can't work with someone who assumes you're dishonest.
Yeah.
And that's the key right there is if you're assuming honesty, then if I say, I didn't mean it that way, I was trying to say this, if they're assuming honesty, they'll believe you. And if they're not assuming honesty, then there's a fundamental problem that you're just not going to be able to get over with. You know, a big reason I see for that happening when I watch things is that people assume that you would act the way they would. So they think, why would I have done this? They assume intent and they assume that it's a shared motivation for actions. And that's a problem when dealing with someone who thinks and reacts fundamentally different.
I think it's a problem in general.
I mean, it's definitely a problem in general. I've
gone through that with people too. I mean, it hurts and it's frustrating when somebody's telling you how you feel. It's like, wait a minute, no, I really don't mean it like that. Or I'm really not intending it that way. And I think people also need to, and as you say, just be open to the fact that, you know, I'm not always right. And I need to communicate with people to figure out what's going on here. And, you know, I think if people assume even a neutral sense, neutral/positive, that would make a big difference and not be so quick to react.
Well, suspend judgment too. And the other thing is Leslie Cameron Bandler, the ex-wife of Richard Bandler, who was the co-founder of neurolinguistic programming, always said, PhD in psychology, always said, there's no such thing as inflexible patients, only inflexible therapists, meaning put the responsibility on yourself as well as the person you're talking to. They should put the responsibility on themselves as well to understand, not to be understood, but to understand where the other person's coming from, not from their first position from their eyes, but maybe through the eyes of the person they're talking to. That would gain a lot of information.
And I know that this is something that sounds like a big burden for our teachers and employers, that we're asking them to take extra time to go out of their way to look at things this way, and it is something that can sometimes feel that way. But if someone is coming to you and saying, I think you've misunderstood, here is what I meant, that's very different than saying, okay, you need to supernaturally get inside the head and read the brainwaves of every single student that you have in every single situation. Right. But when someone says, this is what you're saying is not my reality, that deserves listening to.
Yeah.
And I think, too, you know, part of, you know, every teacher does have some kind of unique relationship with their students. And when I say relationship, I mean there's some kind of interaction that occurs or lack of interaction. And, you know, just the foundation of relationships in general, you know, a person needs to be in a position to communicate effectively, and you know, no matter how old the child is or the student is, I think it's important that teachers don't just give up on the fact, like, this will be too hard, or how in the world am I going to do this, and make whatever effort they can make reasonably, at least as a start, you know, instead of going, I just don't know, and backing out entirely, but thinking of, you know, I may not be able to do everything, or may not be able to do everything perfectly, but I can do something. And I think looking at it from that angle is really important.
Very empowering.
And I think, you know, obviously, you know, thinking about thinking, we've talked about this throughout the show and throughout all of our shows. One of the things I value about, you know, my specialty in relationship development intervention, or known as RDI, is this is really the focus of the therapy, is teaching others, parents, you know, individuals, to think about their thinking and communication and how to effectively grow that way, grow in the social emotional side, and just grow in their self-awareness of thinking about thinking. And so if anybody wants more information on RDI, I think it if you're interested in what you've heard about today, I think it would be really helpful for you. And the website is www.rdiconnect.com. Or you can also go to my website, which is autismwithexcellence.com, and check out a little bit more about this kind of therapeutic approach. You know, and not just for people on the spectrum. It's actually really for everybody. So I just want to reinforce, too, as we're coming to the end of the show, we desperately and definitely want your feedback on Facebook. And Big Daddy Dave's trying to tell me something here.
It's called Four Fingers, probably 4 minutes. Am I right, Mr. Tom? All right. Oh, three minutes. All right. I was close.
Why is everyone giving me the fingers? Hey, come on now.
Tom, shame on you.
Well, actually, Paul has a big announcement, though, too, that we wanted to make sure and get. We're very excited about this.
Starting today, our show will be available as a podcast.
Nice.
We expect it to be available by tomorrow morning. We're hoping sooner than that, but at the latest tomorrow morning, it should be downloadable. The link to our podcast feed is at our Facebook page. If you go to the info section, you'll see a link to the Facebook or the podcast feed. Once we've got an episode up on it, we should be able to get it available on iTunes. So you'll be able to search iTunes for Understanding Autism and find us.
Nice. Give them some knuckles.
Wait, do you have an applause? I'm sorry, I put Tom on the spot. Tom, can you find a quick applause for Paul? And oh yeah.
Oh, the yes. Crowd is just going crazy here. Wow,
nice.
Tom is
actually amazing. He's a fabulous listener and multitasker. Love him. Thanks, Tom. And thanks, Paul, for getting that organized. Really appreciate it. We want to make this information useful, meaningful, insightful, and accessible. So I want you to know on our end, we're really working towards that. You know, and I think breakthrough thinking in general is really working towards that. So, you know, tech issues and things are always going to arise. I just really hope that that you're patient with us and know that our intentions are absolutely to continue to improve efficient and awesome delivery of our content. So, but again, you want to definitely check our Facebook page, facebook.com/understandingautismradio. And as Paul said, we have a link for our new podcast there. And please comment and share your thoughts and questions and ideas. For future shows, if you have an idea and you'd like to be a guest on the show, we'd love to hear about that, too. There's plenty of room on Facebook to communicate all of those things. So we have a very, very exciting show next month. But next week. Oh, my gosh. This month was split up a little differently. On Monday, which is the second Monday of the month, we're going to be talking about how to communicate and plan for holidays with your children and adults with autism, and, you know, going through helping family members and your children understand how to participate and enjoy in the holidays. And I also want to thank Laura for being here with us today. We'd love to have you back. Thank you so much for sharing.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
I want to thank Big Daddy Dave.
Thank you.
Of course, Paul. For coming here all the way from Houston. We really appreciate you listening, and you've been listening to Understanding Autism on Breakthrough Thinking.